You are listening to Arts on the Air, a bi-weekly-ish interview show dedicated to Savannah, Georgia's artists, musicians, and authors. Each episode will feature a guest in conversation about their philosophy, practice, and current projects, as well as their thoughts on the state of the arts in our community of Savannah. Our theme music is a clip of Summer Nights by the Eric Jones Trio. It's provided by our friend Mark Chesnow, who plays with the Eric Jones Trio every Thursday and Sunday at Good Times Jazz Bar downtown. Hey everyone, welcome to Arts on the Air. This is Tamara Garvey and I'm with David Laughlin. Welcome. Hey. And today we are so excited to sit down with Autumn Gary. Welcome, Autumn.
Hey, thank you.
So happy to have you.
Thank you.
I'm going to read a little bio about you. Autumn is an American / First Nations painter, sculptor, and art instructor from Portland, Oregon, mostly self-taught. And her practice revolves around therapeutic art outreach, public art, and intertribal collaboration with Indigenous and Native arts communities.
Wow, love it. That was good.
The words are, yeah, I had to work hard just to get the words out.
Yeah. Come on, you can do it.
It's a very intelligent.
We're behind. Sound really good.
It's an incredibly intelligent sounding bio.
I love it.
Good luck. We're all counting on
you. Yeah, exactly.
I got it.
Now hold that up.
Fabulous. So we can start from, you're from Portland, Oregon.
Yes.
Did you grow up spending a lot of time outside?
I did.
Yeah,
absolutely. So, I grew up in a family of artists. My dad was a graphic designer, kind of a prominent graphic designer during that time in the Pearl District. And he had a studio downtown where the bottom, like it was all these artists in this beautiful old loft, you know, and at the bottom there was Blue Sky Gallery, which was ran by Chris Rauschenberg, who's Robert Rauschenberg's son.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, so I grew up in this environment that just had like every studio in that space, pretty much. There was some people in advertising or things like that, but almost everyone in there was an artist in some capacity. So I had this life of just kind of growing up, weaving in and out of studio spaces and having access through my dad to these beautiful things.
Yeah.
And then my mom who raised me, she was a physical therapist. So it's kind of interesting because I've seen a lot of my life go full circle.
Yeah.
Like I didn't set out on a path of doing exactly what I'm doing. It just kind of came to me. And it makes sense that it came to me when I look back at like how I was raised.
Your art, you really incorporate a lot of, it's both art and like physical expression and physical movement. So it is kind of both of them.
Yeah.
Together.
And like using the art as a therapeutic tool with the center blind and with speech and hearing.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, my mom raised us in a home where we were, you know, constantly inclusive with everybody. I mean, like my piano tuner was blind. I had friends come over that had different, abilities.
Your piano tutor was?
Tuner? Tuner.
Okay.
Which was
either
like
one.
The best tuner in
wild.
The world.
Well,
and I remember...
I could see you.
Yeah. I think that like growing up like that, it was very normal to me to see people creating and living with completely different backgrounds.
Yeah.
And
with an open mind.
Yeah.
Less structure than what we are trained to do, actually.
Yeah. And your family's of a First Nations community?
So my dad is not. So my mom is, and I wasn't raised by my mom. So that is something, but she's always been a thread through my life. And so her influence is very strong in my life with that.
Yeah.
But, that was something that through the years I kind of have reconnected with too for my own healing and my own sort of... there's certain medicines you need. I think we're all encoded with everything we need.
Yeah.
Like it's in our DNA, it's in our blood, it's in our spirit. And I think that like there comes a point where things will call to you.
Yeah.
And you just answer the call kind of thing.
Yeah.
And everyone's on a path and it's different for everyone. But for me, that was necessary for me to reconnect. And
yeah. And given enough with long lengths of time, your relationships, things ebb and flow and come back around. And
absolutely.
Things change a lot.
Yeah. So.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's been a big part of my journey.
So you grew up playing piano a bit?
I did a little bit. I played for about 4 years. I probably would have played longer if I was given, I think I was an undiagnosed ADHD. I mean, for sure. Yeah. Let's just tell it like it is.
Okay.
So my, like, I had my first piano teacher would let me do whatever I want.
Yeah.
Like, I could just, like, she'd be like, automobile.
Like, freestyling on the
yeah,
piano.
Yeah, kinda. And yeah. So I would go home and
I'd somebody had to do it once first.
Oh,
so
yeah.
Why not you?
Yeah. And yeah. She would let, like, she would say, what do you want to learn? And I go, oh, I really like this song. And she'd give me, like, a version of it that I could learn. So I experimented a lot and I would make my own songs and stuff.
Yeah.
And then my second teacher was more classically trained.
Yeah.
You know, curl the fingers, do the,
like your form.
Mm-hmm. And that type of structure and discipline, because I'm a slightly rebellious person, not that it wasn't good for me, but I do think it kind of, I sort of lost interest.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah. Because I'm.
Because it was too structured.
It was too structured for the way that I am.
Or I guess if you thought as you're getting older, it's probably going to get more and more serious and more geared toward
it,
like recitals and things. Like it's only going to be going more that direction.
Yeah, because it was like, you know, the recitals and the... And I was like, eh, I don't think that's me. I think I'm the one that just wants to, like...
But there are the competitions you could join.
Right. And I wasn't a very... I guess my family says I am competitive, but I don't think I'm competitive in the way that, like... is like that.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I understand.
It's a different type of competition.
You're more competing with yourself.
That's it. Yeah.
Yeah. You're trying to gain traditional
for
better
piano.
Knowledge and craft of your
craft.
Right,
right.
Were you doing a lot of art as well growing up?
Oh, like, my goodness,
just
yes.
painting, yeah. Okay, yeah. So you were always
in that
tall.
Environment?
Yeah,
I'm
yeah.
surprised.
Yeah, always. Yeah, my dad was actually really awesome at fostering that. Like, you know, we really didn't watch much TV. I was always outside.
Cheers.
Yeah. And, you know, we would play, like, the doodle game and, like, you know, the exquisite chords.
Is that the
like,
thing with the magnets with the little stick?
Well, the doodle thing he would do is just draw a squiggle and just we would turn it into
something. Oh, and then you'd keep going. Okay.
Yeah, we'd sit around and draw each other or just play with, you know, every year we'd make cards, Christmas cards, printmaking. I mean, everything was very tactile.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's wild.
Yeah, I grew up with... Definitely art was like not a...
You were very fortunate, let me tell you.
And that's the thing that I guess I didn't realize. There was like, I had a, you know, I did go to some school. I definitely was mentored under a lot of awesome artists. But, you know, there was this insecurity part of me in certain circles for a while because I never like finished. Like I dropped out of art, I dropped out of things and I had a hard time sticking with things because they just weren't aligned with my path. And then I realized, like, oh my gosh, I've been so privileged, like truly privileged to grow up in an environment that allowed me access to things that other people don't have access to.
And a lot of people wouldn't even realize that, though.
Yeah.
So you're fortunate to have done that.
What?
To have recognized.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, it was just kind of like a strange revelation because to me it's almost like you don't know your own life.
Right.
You're in the...
Yeah, it's
right.
all
it's like
you
the
know.
Frog in the pond. You don't know that's your, you know.
Yeah, that's the only possibility
you
know.
Yeah, that's just what I knew.
So.
And so looking out, people were like, oh, my dad doesn't want me to go to art school or did it. You know, people would tell me these stories about, like, my family's disappointed that I'm going. And I'm like, really? Like, I was always encouraged.
Right.
Yeah.
So I do now I realize how much, oh, my gosh. So when it says I was self-taught. Not really. I mean,
it was
that's
like
very
community
flattering.
Teaching.
Like,
yeah.
That's very flattering.
Anyone who is self-taught had good mentors.
100%.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Nothing we do is alone, ever.
Oh, of course not. You're
ever.
Not in a bubble.
And you had your dad's whole, like, art studio community that you were running around
and we
talking
all
to.
Need one another. I mean, part of my emphasis on doing art with community, with children, like, everyone from babies to 95, you know, I think my eldest is 95 now, is we need each other. We belong to one another.
Well, I mean,
we are not alone doing
that's a very
anything.
First Nation thing.
Yeah. Well, that's what I was taught.
Right.
That's really interesting, too, because I was having this discussion with someone recently about your brain. Like, first, even though I have European ancestry and all these other things, I definitely got a pack brain. Like, I have a brain that thinks... I don't see things as separate from me. Like a lot of times I've had disagreements with people and I realize that the disagreement I'm having is often that. They're coming from an individual perspective where I'm coming from like...
Collectivism.
Kind of, yeah. I mean, But that has created actual, like, and it's not, and one is
and
not.
And that other is called narrow-mindedness, I'm upset.
Maybe.
I know you probably are too polite to say, but
yeah.
I understand this completely.
Yeah.
And it's, you usually end up with a person who is just not as broad-minded. And so they don't want to give up. And so they're, you know, you start having arguments.
Yeah.
Because they don't want to give up their idea.
Right.
When really, let's be open to a few ideas here.
Yeah.
Or even that we're part of a collective, helping each other out and being part, you know, we're part of a tree.
Yeah. No, we're like part of everything.
Right.
Like, if you really get into it, like, you know, and that's
what. Let's get in.
Let's do it. And this is what I do. Like, I mean, you know, we'll go, I always tell people, like, we'll go in orbit really fast. Like, I'm working on going to 11D.
Mm-hmm.
That's my new.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like the 22 love guy, man. Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. Let's go there.
Yeah.
But yeah, we belong to each other. Everything is connected. I mean, we're literally just atoms buzzing around.
I think when your way of thinking is real, is in any sense, is like kind of out of the dominant, like, lockstep way of thinking, it can be a little bit lonely. It can be a little bit of a lonely
track.
Totally
isolating. Yeah. And that's why I do check-ins. Like, I go to the reservation and I see the medicine woman there, and she's been a huge part of my healing and my journey and my... Because it is, you know, when you have a certain way that isn't, yeah, like you said, mainstream or adopted by the culture that you're living in, it is lonely. And here, especially, there isn't a lot of, there probably are a lot of indigenous people, but just we're not, like, there's not a lot of space for that.
Right. Do you think, like, even though, if you interact with a lot of artists, do they tend to at least be kind of closer to your way of thinking than just
absolutely
the average person?
Because I think art, there's that creative energy that when you're in the moment of creation, you have to be present.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess you don't have to be, but, like, often you are.
It is. I mean, it is pretty amazing. We have so many artists and creatives here in town for the size of the city.
Savannah's
so we're this
amazing.
Real... little weird tight hub of oddballs.
Once you drive out of Savannah, you're in Georgia.
When you mentioned you go back to the reservation, is that in Portland or is that like somewhere around here?
In
you
Canada.
Ganawagi.
Yeah, it's outside of Montreal, you know. Quebec.
They did have a powwow here. We were in South Carolina last
year.
I know.
I went.
Did you?
And I saw a family from Ganawagi there.
Oh, really?
Whoa.
And the little girl was a jingle dress dancer, and Turtle Clan, and
I
it was really cool because right before I left the house too, I had I was just like really quickly I had this impulse to like put on, I have a beaded cuff of a turtle, and I put it on, and when I got there, they were doing this I don't know the crow dance or something. Anyway, she went out by herself, and I was like, she's so brave to go out all by herself.
This little kid was.
Yeah. So when she was done, I just felt like the spirit was telling me to give her the bracelet.
Did you?
Yes.
God love you.
And
that's so
great. But it was, you know, it was just so cool because it was so perfect. It was like I hadn't even really thought about putting it on. It was just everything was meant, like the tutu today. Everything was meant to be, and it was just so perfect.
Right.
I have a dumb question. Is obviously the word powwow, is that literally, is it sort of like a family reunion for just like all different indigenous
people?
It's like a gathering.
Peoples?
Yeah. It's just it's like a gathering of you know, like the largest one is like gathering of nations. So it's it's like a way to get
it's
together.
It's sort of a family reunion.
Yeah.
You said people
sure,
came from Canada. Like people,
they do.
All different tribes
come
came.
From everywhere and share their dances and their foods and their, you know.
It's like a festival.
Yeah.
Is it like,
jewelry,
like a multi?
Yeah, and a lot of
Well, you know, I mean, a lot of people don't realize this, but in my lifetime, even though I'm old, a lot of the traditions and even the language was not allowed to be spoken by the natives.
Right.
And I didn't know what a big deal that was. When I was young, my relatives were really excited about it.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that it was forbidden.
Yeah, and the dances were forbidden.
Well,
actually,
a lot of people don't realize that.
No, and honestly,
it's
some of
recent.
Those laws are up into the 90s, and the residential boarding schools were up into the 90s and early 2002. So, and that's kind of my background, is that my grandma was, great-grandma was residential school survivor. And
and
her sisters
and
stuff. Yeah, I never met her. I never had met her because of family... basically never was raised in the culture. They got taken off and then assimilated.
Right.
But what's really wild is that, like, they grew up in Malone, which is right across from Ganawagi. So, like, literally, like, where you're... And that always was really amazing to me, to think that you can be removed from something that is, like, right next to you and never know it, really. You know?
That is wild.
Because
more
it's
of a,
so...
More of a
it's like a hearty... It just, my heart went, like, whew. Because it's so close,
what a small
but
world,
it's so
yeah.
far away, right?
What is it? It's called Ganawagi?
Yeah, Ganawagi.
Is that a specific, like, how did you end up there specifically? Is it a really big,
so when
wide-ranging
we it's kind of the origin of a lot of the Mohawk people. Oh. So when we were trying to, my mom was trying to trace back, like, where my grandma's probably from, it was either Ganawagi or Akwesasne. And it made the most sense that it would be Ganawagi because of when she was born and kind of, that everybody kind of, Ganawagi is older.
Okay.
So
cool.
That was kind of how that came to pass.
Wow.
But yeah. But I mean, here's, it's like, I'm at a point now in my life where a lot of the things that have been painful, it's not that that it ever goes away, but it's sort of like, I'm ready for restoration and healing and learning. I have so much to learn. I'm supposed to be learning Mohawk. Because you were talking about the language. So,
yeah.
How do you learn that?
Oh my gosh, you need, so luckily I have like a couple friends that speak Mohawk. I have the medicine woman and my friend Sandra Deer, she speaks Mohawk. And but you need someone who knows how to actually speak to help you because the sounds are very different.
Mm.
But you know, it's really, for me, I have to scratch the, at first I was fighting myself, like kind of trying to do it with an English brain. Like,
yes.
You know, because that's what
yes.
I know. I mean, I'm like, and we were never taught to like speak a bunch of other languages
right.
here. It was like, speak English well. It was like,
right.
I barely do that. But so.
You got one language sort of down.
Yeah, kind of. I kind of know.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so I had to kind of obliterate that like whole part of my, like, and I'm still, I mean, I'm. It's hard.
It's a different brain.
What I do mostly is listen to it because it feels so good to hear it. So I listen. I'll play like one word over and over and over again.
Yeah.
And just listen to the resonance of
I
that
never
word.
Thought of this, but is that available now, like on Babbel?
Yeah, you can
yeah.
find
it. Really?
Yeah.
I never thought about
or Duolingo
that.
Or
yeah, I don't know about Duolingo, but yeah, there are programs you can find it. Wow. I honestly go, I have a lexicon. My mom had she has a huge collection that I got through my brother from my mom, and it is really cool. It's a whole big folder she's collected over the years of language, dialect. But you can find like YouTube videos and things like that.
Mm.
But you know, you were talking about sound, language and taking away language. And I think it's a really powerful statement because our healing is in sound. It's in songs, it's in vibration. And there are words that do not translate. Like, you know, I could ask something and not really know what I'm asking for because in English, like when I was visiting the medicine woman, I was like, I would love to hear you say that we have a Thanksgiving prayer. And she's like, amazing. Like she's the most, like she, that's her original tongue.
Yeah.
So like hearing her speak is just, I don't know, it does something to my heart. And she was like, Autumn, you don't know what you're asking. And I was like, I realize I didn't. Because I really don't. I really don't know what I'm asking because the words aren't even the same. So,
but
like,
it's more than just the words.
That's what
that
I mean.
Source.
Yeah. So exactly. And so then I realized, like, I need to learn. And
so,
that's kind of what I need to learn. So that I understand these, like, vibrations and resonance and healing and...
Yeah.
What's
wow.
really in there? It's powerful.
I mean, is Thanksgiving just as a subject like a painful thing to talk about?
Well, the Thanksgiving prayer is a totally different thing. The Thanksgiving prayer is like it's an address that you say before a lot of events, like maybe before a powwow or a ceremony or something. It lists gratitude to everything. you know.
Okay, cool.
Everything, like plant medicine, birds of the air.
Yeah.
Or, you know, I mean,
that's kind of, it seems almost like extra weirdly ironic that we would have taken that word and attributed it to this holiday, like the U.S., that we put it on this holiday in which
Don't get me started on American history.
That's the word we picked, yeah.
Yeah.
And you guys have this word for this larger, broader, more beautiful thing.
Well.
And that's what I'm trying to learn is that prayer, because that will be, like, for me,
That would be powerful.
Right? So that's my goal. I'm giving myself.
I mean, you recognize the power in it right away.
Oh.
And that's from the source. Like But for you to have it, it would take on a different power.
Mm-hmm.
But still a lofty goal.
It's huge.
To strive for, because that's a lot.
Yeah.
It really
good
is.
Because I think that...
No, it's great.
Well, and again, if I change the way that I'm thinking, it doesn't feel like a mountain as much as it feels like a flow.
But you're not talking about just repetition.
No.
No, it's the full.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the full 9 yards.
Yeah.
All you can do is just start with your tiny little steps and just start chipping away at
little
it.
Little tiny steps.
Just start attacking in small ways.
Little
steps. That's all you can do.
Yeah, and it feels good because it feels like I get closer and closer to something.
I mean, doing something is better than absolutely nothing, so no matter what you can do.
Should I start with Nam-myo Renge Kyo? Should I start doing that? Because there's evidences in many different cultures of this, and it's really... it's not the power, it's not the words itself. That's the thing.
What language is that, what you just said?
That was Buddhism.
Oh.
But everybody knows that.
I mean, come on.
But
I wasn't sure.
I always say so many stupid things.
North Tibetan.
Nothing is stupid.
That was North Tibetan Buddhism. Exactly.
I can't believe I couldn't delineate out.
Yeah, I know. Everybody makes a mistake. They think it's East. But,
oh my God, I love it.
But it's just the idea. That's what, to me, is a lot of what being an artist is about, too.
It sounds
is
like
that you are
attention.
Bringing, it's not so much as what you are actually producing, what it sounds like. There's more than that going on.
Yeah.
And different cultures have developed that, and they brought it down because it's pretty easy for a chant.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say, or the repetition, let's say. This is a ritual we're doing. And that brings about a lot of the collectivism as well, because other people can be involved with it now. Instead of having a discussion, you're all like-minded now.
One,
at least for a moment.
Yes, yes.
And that brings out a lot of good, or hopefully.
I definitely
it brings
think
out a
that's
lot
true.
Of good.
Yeah. It just gets collectively, everybody's focused in one certain space, and then you can go.
And that's what I like about community art. I mean, like, that's a good segue into, like, why I love so much the community art, is that there's these moments where we are sharing a mind.
Right.
And that is such a powerful thing. And I tell people that all the time because it's such a hard thing to describe because it is literally a moment that happens. It's not something you could ever...
You don't try to latch onto it. You don't try to keep it.
Right. It's just a document.
But, and you're all making it together.
But if it all works out, it happens sometimes.
Yeah.
That's
you all know.
And you all know because it turns into like right here, no. Here, yes, and everybody says yes at the same time, and you're like, oh my God, we're seeing the same thing, and it's so exciting. And you know, it doesn't really matter, like you said. I mean, there are things that matter, of course, but like the process is kind of like the vehicle that gets us to that one mind. Could be anything. It could be
music or dance,
sharing.
I mean, I forget who it was. Some theological scholar, Bo Diddley. No, I don't know who it was, but was talking about where they got a lot of their education and information from. And they said one of them was the comic strip Peanuts.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that makes sense.
You didn't have to go really deep
to
find some of this stuff, but if you find a meaning in it, it could be the comics. It could be anything.
Some of the moments in Peanuts, they're having these like,
well, I shouldn't
existential moments, right?
Well, they are. Frankly, Peanuts taught me a lot of humanity, but that's my own story.
No, so. It's true. Like, someone was in so many of the life lessons that we walk right by are literally on our path every day in nature, whatever. And it was funny because one of my friends posted on the Instagram, you know, like a little story, and it said, it was a guy talking about how a tree grows up and down. Mm. A tree grows two ways all the time.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of people are thinking about the tree growing up to the sun. But the tree's constantly growing two ways. And, I mean, these are just so like, obvious concepts.
Great
that
analogy.
That are so powerful in so many nature.
Yeah,
for
the
me,
one above ground is what they put on Instagram. Yeah. Below ground.
Yeah.
And that's what's literally rooting the growth of the buds.
Exactly.
Interesting.
Yes.
Can we, okay, not to
get it. You're getting it, Tim.
You know, I always like a pun, so.
Oh, yeah, we need a pun.
I mean, not to bring the interview back too,
okay,
literally,
please.
But so what year, like, how did you arrive in Savannah? When brought you here?
I'm going to sound so true.
Around when?
No, listen,
when,
this is so
funny. Also.
What I love about this is I sound so trippy, dude. Like, it was a dream. I had a dream. In my sleep, I had a dream of Savannah. Now, to be... And all, like when I think about why I probably dreamt of Savannah, is years before that, when I was in Dallas, one of my really good friends told me, "Oh, Autumn," he said, "I think you would love Savannah." And I was like, "Oh, okay." I'd never been. I mean, I'd never.
Yeah.
Been. Yeah.
It's as far away as possible.
Yeah,
from
I
Oregon.
Just hadn't even considered. It's very far. I didn't really know anything about Savannah. So anyway, I had completely forgot about that he had said that. And then when I was living outside of Taos in the mountains, I had my babies in Taos and had some property out in the mountains in Costilla, kind of on the border of Colorado, New Mexico.
Wow.
And a woman wanted to buy our house from California, and it's pretty isolated out there. It was really beautiful way to raise my kids up until, like, you know, my daughter was like almost five. But I did start to be, you know, I worked with the community there, worked with a group called Puentes, it was pregnant teen moms and stuff. And I did kind of start to see that, like, the options for, like, school and education were a little, like, my neighborhood, like, where I was, there was only like 200 people. So we really didn't have a very strong school system or any of that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So I definitely felt like I might need more for my kids to be exposed to a little bit more.
Yeah, like more infrastructure,
mm-hmm.
kind of.
You all are just like, not that that is not a beautiful upbringing. It is, but I just knowing...
Up to a point.
Yeah, I just wanted them to have exposure to different cultures, different things. So anyway, I didn't know what we were gonna do for sure, but I had a dream, and it was of Savannah. And I was here, and I could see the city. I was living here. I could feel it.
Yeah.
It was like, and so.
How did you know it was Savannah?
I just knew. You know how you know? I mean,
yeah.
I don't know if you're a dreamer, but in your dreams, you know stuff. You're just like, you know where you.
You saw the statue of General Oglethorpe?
Yeah, then? No, I did not. That might have been. No, I'm just
that might have scared you away. Yeah.
Was it like the squares, the trees?
I thought, yeah. I just know that I was here. It was like I just knew I was in Savannah.
Right.
And I was walking, you know, just kind of like little glimpses of my life here. Like I had already been here.
Mm.
And so I was like, oh, that's where we're supposed to go. And so...
Let me just say, because it was like Charleston, but better.
Right, right, okay, right.
Yeah.
She's not
keep
as...
Keep that.
Yeah, keep that. Someone said she's the soulful sister, not the snobby sister. Someone told me that. Charleston's the snobby sister. Yeah, I'm not bagging Charleston, but that
yes,
was something someone
that's
told
good.
Me.
That keep
was
that
something,
too.
Someone, oh no. Someone told me that. But yeah, so luckily I, you know, my husband, I've been a dreamer my whole life. He's known me since I was 11. And he's seen how my dreams pan out. So he was like, okay. You know, seriously.
Well, we're doing that now.
Yeah, okay.
Okay.
And I look back and I go, that was pretty cool how he was just like, all right, mm-hmm. let's load up the truck. We like look like the grapes of wrath. You know, we like
oh
yeah,
God.
Everything
yeah.
on the
oh
truck.
God.
I
was
got my bird in the front seat.
What type of bird?
My birds. Luna and Sol, they were little cockatiels.
Oh my God.
Oh my God, you're so cute.
What is that? What's that TV show from the 50s or 60s with like the huge wagon with like stuff?
Are you talking
on.
About
yes,
the
yeah.
Beverly?
Yeah.
Is Beverly
Hills?
Yeah, that's
oh, okay.
what I imagined.
It was pretty much like
okay.
that.
Yeah.
And yeah, like
you load it all up in your truck.
The back of the truck. Like, yeah,
what year was that? That
so
you
we
got
had
here?
No.
I like the Grapes of Wrath.
That was
now
17.
Be better, but I didn't think I would get that.
17 years
right.
ago.
Okay.
17 years ago. I can't remember.
Was that like 2008?
I don't do math.
God, which of us, all three of us, struggling. Why did you phrase it like that 17 years ago? None of us can handle this.
I know.
I think that's about two.
My brain. No, I'm just kidding.
No, I think you're right.
Is that right?
Let's just say you're right.
Yeah.
That's approximate. I lived here at that point, too.
Oh,
so,
cool.
Yeah, so it was like the different, that era of Savannah.
It was different.
Yeah.
It was a little different.
It was a lot less.
Yeah.
Much less tourists,
yeah,
and not as many.
Not as many buildings.
It wasn't being profiled in like bridal magazines
right,
and travel magazines
right,
and
right,
things
right.
like that. So, interesting.
Yeah, back when it was cool, man.
Yeah.
So you're right. So, you have all these different like cool, different, distinct projects you've done. But I really wanted to talk about the Savannah Center for the Blind and Low Vision.
Okay.
Yeah. How did you start?
I think I've been working with them for almost like 11 years or something.
Okay.
I can't.
Again, we have to do math.
Wow.
Yeah, I don't math. It's just like,
well, no,
I started
still,
doing outreach with the museum like
still.
11 years ago, I think it was.
Oh.
So.
Like with the Telfair?
Through the Telfair, cool. Yeah. And then because of that, I sort of like, you know, have formed relationships, obviously,
sure.
with people. So a lot of times I get, you know, called outside of the Telfair
right.
to do, which is why I've sort of remained an independent contractor so that I have that freedom if someone wants me to do.
Had you just
outside.
Reached out to someone at the Telfair and you were like, I have things to give, like I have skills.
What happened
even,
with that?
I'm so fascinated by this.
Oh my, so this is my whole life. Okay, so everywhere I've lived, even in, I lived in Brooklyn as well. And
I did too.
Oh my gosh, look at us.
Wow.
2-2-2. 22 love. Yeah, like jobs have honestly like just kind of come to me.
Yeah.
And I feel very thankful for that. But like I feel like I've literally had people just say, hey, I think this, would you be willing to do this? Do you want to do it? Does this feel like a good fit? And I usually just say yes if it feels right.
Yeah.
So
so the Telfair was like looking for ways
yeah,
to like, get
I had
out of the
actually
community.
Worked I well I had started my friend Martha was there and she was in the education department. She's actually a really really cool woman. And she's a native, she's Apache. And she had been she said, "Autumn, I think, you know, like you could start out doing docent work. That would be really fun, like to just, because I was sort of, I had had really bad rheumatoid arthritis for many, many years.
Oh.
Mm. That was, almost, it was kind of crippling. I'd had some surgery on my foot and some issues.
Yeah, it can be
I
really hard
really
to maintain that, right?
It was awful. I had a really hard time. And so, and my healing came through a dream too that the medicine woman helped me with, but that's a whole nother story. But anyway, at the time I wanted to do something. I was like, I need to do something so that I get out of bed. I'm not just like in pain. And,
right.
da, da, da. And so Martha was like, why don't you docent at the museum? So I took the docent certification. I did that and I enjoyed it a lot just being around the art and community. And then I was asked by Kit Bradley, who's the studio programs manager, if I wanted to assist in a workshop that Betsy Kane was doing.
Wow.
Years ago.
All these longtime
yeah.
Savannah people.
Yeah. And so I did that and loved it. And somehow that just spiraled into a job for me, doing like open studio stuff and outreach.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
And at the Center for the Blind, you were like,
oh,
you
I'm
and
sorry.
The, oh, no, sorry. So you and the students, you were like collaborating and you did these metal sculptures.
So
and
the
they
sculptures happen over time because I keep in touch with them a lot for like events and things they're doing. And we had, they wanted to do something, you know, a sculptor always works the best with the blind, I think. I do have a couple like painters.
Mm.
Maggie, she's amazing. She's a painter. She'll use her finger and paint and then go to the next part and paint,
oh.
and, you know, kind of.
Wow.
And we have these,
on.
Like, we
yeah.
have these really cool ways that we can, like, also help with color and just,
wow.
yeah, like, we put things in cupcake tins and there's a lot of little tricks we use. But, yeah, the sculptural aspect happened where I was approached by Leslie and Lois and they said, would you like to make a sculpture for our center? And, we wanted to use the participants as well. So what I did is I went in there and had them make shapes out of wire, like aluminum wire, and the shapes were to represent a story of their life. So something that kind of came full circle, because the shapes had to close, so they had a loop. So it was like, what is something you've gone through that has like a beginning to an end? And what does that path look like as you're building it?
So each one of them has a little story, basically.
That's great.
Yeah. It was really powerful. And it, you know, it's like when you look at it, I kept all the shapes very flat, almost like cookie cutter, because we had them laser cut, or not water jet cut, I'm sorry.
Are they like steel?
Sean at Precision Metal cut them. Yeah, steel. Stainless steel. So that they can be touched. So, yeah, I spent like 8 months sanding edges, and then my husband welded them together, and yeah, they're just really lovely. So my job was to kind of help design with all those shapes and the excess, how to put them together in a way that...
Right, yeah, because each piece is like an amalgamation of a few different the stories together, and then there's like a few different pieces.
Yeah, and they wanted like a tall monumental sculpture, but it just ended up being like, oh wait a minute, that doesn't make sense. Like, we need to feel it. We need to move through. Yeah, like
right. And they're more like person level.
Yeah, your eyes are your hands. So if you can't reach, you're not going to see what's up there.
And the thing, so I found in this like article that I'd found about you, they describe it. It's called a training sidewalk.
Yeah,
it was so cool. So it was like, that the center had this thing where they recreated all the different like topography or whatever that people might come across when they're walking through a city, and so people are training on how to like get through this terrain.
And it's the only one right now that we have in Georgia.
Wow.
So that is kind of cool, because they can start on the walkway and use and feel the different textures on the sidewalk. They go up the stairs. There's like little beds.
I have never heard.
It's so cool. A training sidewalk.
It's so cool.
It's really cool. Yeah. And then when they get to the end, there's the sculpture, so they can go in there. And the coolest thing was when we had it all installed and invited the artist that co-created with us back, and they found their shape.
Oh.
And I mean, it was like, oh my gosh, my heart.
Wow.
Oh my God. That sounds
so
beautiful.
Yeah. And it's made to touch, you know, it's like, it's not made, you know, it's like, please touch this. So yeah, that was a really,
it's an amazing project.
Yeah. And I'm
where
are we? To do
start again. Start all over again.
Savannah Center of Blind and Low Vision.
Where
it's
is
on
that?
Cornell,
on Cornell.
Off of Waters.
Oh, okay. So it's just south
kind of behind, like Bethesda. You know where Bethesda? If you take, you know, it goes to Bethesda, or not Bethesda. My bad. What is this boys' school? BC.
Okay.
BC.
I mean, I know Waters. I don't really know these other smaller roads.
I get BC and Bethesda mixed up. But yeah, it's a beautiful center, and I mean, it's like family. Like, they're literally like family to me.
Do you?
I mean, it's amazing.
And you and your husband, I guess you collaborate a lot on these metal pieces.
Yeah, we've been collaborating. And then me doing this show right now, coming up the 912, my whole... So it's funny, this is full circle of what we've been talking about, is the show is called Of One Mind. And I'm doing it with my friend Alexis.
Yeah, AJ of Silver Studios.
Oh, AJ.
You guys are about to have, does it start? It's like from this July through next year.
Yeah,
you're
going
to have the 912 room.
And then I think it's up for 6 months, maybe. Maybe, I don't know.
They had the dates on like the museum's website.
Okay,
it was long.
Yeah,
so you're going to have that whole 912 room.
Yeah,
it's incredible.
I'm so excited. And we get the Lewis Gallery. So I'm going to do... I'm doing a few sculptures for the terraces outside, too.
That'll be fun.
Because I really like sculpture outside.
Yeah.
I'm a huge fan of what happens when you interact with the sun.
Mm-hmm.
I believe sun is like life energy. So, like, I really wanted to. I was so thankful that Ansel said, "Oh, we have terraces." And I was like, oh! So I'm, like, so thankful to her, because she just really made this, this amazing opportunity.
I know her. We play pickleball together.
I love her.
Ansel and I.
Yeah, she's an amazing human being. And so that's going to be cool to have. I'll have four pieces out on the terrace, and then inside we're going to have a collaboration.
How did you and AJ end up doing this together? Did you decide on it first and then you approached the Telfer? Okay.
Well, no. She approached... Ansel approached me. I had talked to her about different things. I mean, we just were talking, you know, and then she asked me about it. And then, you know, I felt like so much of what my heart is about collaboration. So I really wanted to bring AJ in.
Yeah.
Because I also feel like AJ is someone very similar to me that is often facilitating for others in the community. Like, I mean, like, he's, if you call AJ, he'll help you with anything. And he has a similar heart.
Does he have a truck?
I have a truck.
He's so. Gonna have to help everybody move right. now.
He does right. help everybody move.
Right.
No, I mean, for real. He's one of those kind of people that, like, just, he makes things happen. And then he had started Soy Como Soy, and he, you know, it's a Latin and indigenous.
I can't wait to meet collective. This guy.
You're gonna, you know it.
You know it. Yeah, he's kidding. That's how I found you, was through the Soy Como Soy Instagram.
Okay, yeah. So yeah. I just feel like everything he's doing for the community, and you know how it is when you're all constantly, like, facilitating things, a lot of times you don't make that time for yourself
yes.
to create. So I felt like in the spirit, whatever, for whatever reason, he was the first person.
Oh, so you want to, like, give back to him by including
Well, I just
him.
Thought of him yes. immediately, and so I said, would that be something you would want to do?
Yeah.
And he was like, yeah.
How do you do, like, a collaborative sculpture together? How'd you do that?
So what we're doing is, because I know the way we both are and the way that we work, he's creating almost like a sky world, and I'm creating like an earth world. Oh. We're exploring a lot of themes of duality and oneness. So it's called Of One Mind. And, but, like, I'm sort of doing, like, the feminine. I mean, it's, everything is feminine and masculine. But, like, I'm talking about, like, divine feminine, divine masculine, all that kind of stuff. And
well, earth so, and sky.
Yeah,
oh,
that's what I'm saying.
Defines.
Yeah, so I'm doing the earth world, and he's doing the sky world. And so the pieces are going to have these almost, like, what he's calling, I'm creating these pieces from the ground that are almost, like, my rooted pieces. Mm. They're figurative, anthropomorphic. I'm very inspired by, like, little doodles and drawings that I do.
Little automatic drawings.
Yeah, and, like, little cave painting. I've always loved petroglyphs and cave paintings and some of the old, like, just the forms of art that are just really, I don't know, there's just something in there.
Basic.
That I feel like it's just in our bones.
Yeah.
Like, those shapes are in us.
Almost like when children draw animals, kind of.
Yeah, because it's
basis.
The... I feel like that is almost the most refined art you can do is the art that's the most simple. Because,
well,
like, if you can reduce something down to, like, four lines, you...
Sure.
Like, a four-year-old is a genius. For real.
That's a good quote.
Yeah.
Actually.
It's true.
Well, I was just thinking that a lot of the cave paintings that you're talking about were used for storytelling.
Yeah.
And it was... Even though we could say it was crude,
mm-hmm.
you know, a bunch of deer or bison, you know, running across the plains, we could tell what that was.
Yeah.
And it made its impact.
Yeah.
Long after the story is gone, really.
Yeah, it did what it set out to do. And
right.
Told a story.
But when you consider, like, some of those places in France where they had the cave, where they were there for what?
Like Lascaux.
How many thousands
yeah.
of years
yeah.
that they'd been there. And so far underground.
Yeah.
They really had to dig down to get into the caves. And it's just amazing that survived at all. I always loved those things.
Exactly.
And you could imagine what type of stories that might have been involved with them, or it could have just been a representational thing that they wanted to show what they were doing. I don't know.
Right.
But it's like you said, it was so basic, but it still got the message across.
Well, and I'd like to change the narrative a little bit, that it isn't crude, that it isn't,
right.
I mean, there's a simplicity to it, but there's also, I mean, look at how it's resonated, like, with us now. And I think that, like, a lot of the narrative that's been taken, just like taking the dances and the music and the language, is also saying, oh, look at that, those simple drawings. Look at those crude.
I hate to say that, too. I know what you mean.
No, no, no.
No, I know what you mean.
Right, right. And I know what you mean, too, because it's hard to talk about because we don't have the language.
Right.
Right.
If we had the language, we would have different words, but we don't. And we've adopted a type of thinking about art that comes from a very colonial mind state. Right. And we've all been taught that. Yeah. I mean, if you live in America or anywhere, you know, as soon as you go to school, they teach you to draw on the lines. Well, they teach you how to develop or how to be.
But like you said, that like conceptually, it's very sophisticated.
Absolutely. Yeah. There's something like completely, I mean, and when you look at the structures, they're all created to align with the sun and like the moon cycles, and like the light will hit the cave and make a spiral, and you're like, what the?
Also, it's like incredible to think that people drew it however many eons, thousands of years ago, and then we still can get it away. Like, that's incredible.
We're going back to find the medicine that we buried.
Right.
That's all we're doing. We're going back now and realizing the knowledge that always was.
Right.
And we're unearthing that because we've got to a place where we realize.
Well, I was just always fascinated with the aspect of who drew something first? Who came up with the idea to even do that? To take a burnt piece of charcoal on the end of a stick and put it on the wall and make a shape. And coming back to finding out where things originated from, I've always been fascinated by, like, you know, that and who made the first guitar.
Right.
Things of where that came from, the lute or whatever.
The origin.
The original stringed instrument, for instance. Where did the very first one, and I have a bad theory about that.
Oh, yeah. A bad theory.
Well, I was thinking that they were sitting around the campfire with a beast on the fire, and the tendons during the fire may have plucked.
Mm. Oh, they snapped.
And one of them may have noticed. Mm. And then started, let's see what happens if we, where do violin strings come from? If we make strings in different shapes and pluck them.
Because it did come from sinew.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so that's where the first musical instrument.
That's your grotesque theory.
That's my grotesque
theory.
It may be grotesque.
I love that it's like around a barbecue. It's like a cookout, man.
Yeah, and then they all start playing.
The music I dig it.
Is that why there's always some guy who drags a guitar to a cookout?
Exactly.
Or a violin.
There's always music.
Or something,
I feel it. It's innate.
I feel that I need to have a string instrument to a fire.
That's true.
A lot of them throw the oboe in the fire.
That'd be kind of cool, though. If someone brought an oboe to a fire, please call me.
Oh, sure. I'm all on my way. I'm up there.
Like Peter and the Wolf. That was my favorite part of Peter.
Oh my God.
Was when the oboe came out. I was like, the duck. Wasn't that the duck?
What a good memory, Peter and the Wolf.
Oh my God, I forgot all about that.
Wow. Yeah. It's so exciting that you have this exhibit up at the Telfer Museum. I love that. Especially because you said when you first got to Savannah 17 years ago, that was your first place that you started working with. So this is super exciting that you have this.
A lot of circle moments.
Yeah.
I'm having a lot of circle moments.
And you do a lot. So on your Instagram, when you're documenting things, I know you do a lot of metal sculptures, and then you take a photo of the way it casts a shadow. Like, you're very into the shadows of metal sculptures. So I feel like for you, like, the part of your art is going to be inside the Telfer or inside the Jepson, but it'll also be outside in that sculpture garden. So as the day goes on, like, the shadows will change.
Yeah.
No, you do that to show it has its own life.
Yes, I do.
Yes.
Yeah, the shadow is a really important aspect of sculpture to me. Like, I feel, it is It is to document its own life.
Yeah, a lot of your documentation is about the cast shadow. It's really cool looking photos.
Yeah.
We'll obviously promote your Instagram. Yeah.
A lot.
And in the exhibition, we're going to have lighting. We're going to experiment a little bit with the lighting so that we can explore that shadow theme.
Is it going to change as the day goes on?
Yeah, we're hoping to have some elements
and
of
color.
Shifting light. Yeah.
Yeah.
And will you have a guy in the corner playing guitar?
I would love that.
Or a lady. It could be anybody playing
guitar. We're going to see how it goes. I mean, we have these plans, and this is what happens, right?
You make plans. I have a kalimba,
Yeah, we have ideas, and they're plans, but we're going to just kind of see how it unfolds, because a lot of the elements, like, you just kind of have to let them.
Sure.
Yeah, you have the atmosphere, and then you see what it wants to be.
It's cool. Yeah, so I know it sounds like the show is going to be up for many months, so you have time to try things out and change it, which is wild. It's like
that's
a living, breathing show.
Something didn't really...
Yeah, you can just try different things.
Yeah, and making this show.
What an opportunity.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
Wow.
I feel very, very thankful.
You are, that's yeah, cool. That's wild.
You've got
a lot of power going on.
You have a lot going on. Can you talk a little about, at the Telfair, you do these day camp classes over the summer for kids too?
Yeah, summer camps.
Yeah.
I do, so I teach, I don't know what they have it called right now, art with the pros. I don't know if
it's like these half day painting and drawing camps.
Yeah, basically we make art.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, we have so much fun. And my summer camps are really fun because they may have some type of a structure to them based on whatever. But honestly, it's a time I feel like for kids, they've been in school all year.
Yeah.
I really just want them to develop their voice and their creative energy. So during summer camps, I love exploring individual strengths and playing with as many types of materials as possible. I really don't, if a kid comes up to me and is like, Miss Autumn, I want to do this, I'm like, let's go.
And it's so nice. The museum is right on that beautiful square. So you can go out in the square and play around collect things.
Oh, yeah. We've done such amazing things just being able to be downtown and have access to go outside. And I always have my outside kids and my inside kids because in summer it gets hot.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm an outside kid, so I try to encourage all the kids to take a little break and get a little sunlight, and even
that's
if
nice.
We're sweating.
That's nice that you have space, though, for the kids who are more indoor
children,
the ones who like the AC.
We have.
All right, so everybody listening, you can send
your
kids.
One of the inside kids.
No, I'm ambi. I'm inside.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, it's okay. Yeah. And some days, maybe you want to be inside, and other days.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. David, don't box me into inside.
Don't make me an inside kid.
Just suddenly popped in my head.
I keep talking about pickleball. You know I go outside.
You're right. Pickleball resolves everything.
Right.
I forgot.
Oh, I wanted to ask about the teaching. Did you, it's a whole different art form to have something that you know and to synthesize it to other people and especially to kids. And I didn't know if that was ever hard for you to figure out how to teach it and if over the years you've changed up your approach and how you do it and everything.
Oof.
Lessons you've learned of how to actually impart knowledge to children. Because that seems like a whole art form.
Yeah.
I must have learned something.
I must have.
Because some people are really good artists or writers or whatever, but not teachers, so...
Well, with your background, you were very loose growing up with your learning.
Yeah.
And so I imagine you approach it as to find out, it's a symbiotic relationship with the students
100%.
About what they want to do and, let's explore to see how you can do it.
Yeah. Right? I honestly, so what I do, the way that I work, just because my brain, and also I like to, you were saying, have a symbiotic relationship. I never know, who my kids, and I,
right.
any kid can be in my class. I don't have any discrepancies. So it's if I have a child who's on the spectrum, or I have different, when I come into class, I don't even ask. I don't want to know. I just, whatever happens, happens.
Yeah.
So we just wing it. I mean, to tell you the truth, I wing it all the time.
Okay.
But that's because, I feel like there is an energy that happens every group of kids that is completely unique that I don't want to miss by having too structured of a plan. So I say I have a lot of ideas, and I will have ideas. I'll go to the beach and I'll write all these ideas I get. I'll go, ooh, we could do this, and we could do that, and we could do this, and we could do that. But I don't have any structure. If you're hungry, you can eat whenever you want to eat in my class. You can do, if you need water. I don't have, want people to be as authentically who they are as they possibly can.
So it's a really different experience for them than when they're at school.
Yeah, and I think some of it might be a little overwhelming to have that much freedom sometimes.
Right.
I have kids that are really hard on themselves because they have a lot of ideas about what they're supposed to be doing or how they're supposed to be behaving, and I think maybe that's the flip side of my teaching that could be a little challenging for some kids, is that they get a lot of freedom to figure out who they are in that freedom. And if I feel like I see someone getting overwhelmed, then I definitely will give them more direction.
I know a lot of kids have anxieties.
Lot of kids have anxieties, and unfortunately we have a lot of performance issues, and I've thought a lot about this too. I think with the development of technology, there's some really great parts of it, but there's also this idea that things are supposed to be perfect Right. You know, if I can go on my little iPad and make a perfect thing, and it can like fill and gradiate and do value.
And you can do undo.
Oh, and you can undo it when you don't like it and it's clear.
Right.
You know, that's very different than when I get out some oil paint and I made a muddy mess.
Charcoal,
and I don't like what I did. You know, I can't just push a button and it's gone.
Yeah.
So that does create a certain type of, there is a psychological relationship with that.
That some really of them are going to beat themselves up a bit.
I have the image of you surfing.
Oh my gosh, I love the water.
Which, well, I mean, in a teaching sense.
Oh, right. Yeah, that's cool.
Instead of, yeah, having it also structured, you are, we have the ocean, we have a wave, but we're going to surf the wave instead of, you know, getting in a boat and telling us where to go.
Right. Fighting the wave.
That makes sense?
Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Or, and sometimes that wave comes and you're not ready to take it, you know, you can dive under it and wait for the next one.
That makes sense too.
Yeah, oh, this is a nice metaphor.
Yeah, that's
it. Yeah. So there's not a lot of I do my best to. At the same time, I'm not. I do try to encourage growth. So I wouldn't say like I have one of my kids go, "You're always pushing me to do better." And I was like, "Well,
that's a shame."
Gosh, I mean, I'm sorry, man.
Nobody else does.
I'm sorry. He goes, "Jeez." But he was you get those kids that are just so freaking talented, and you're like, oh man, there's so much more there. And I mean, they're all, like, everyone is their own, you know.
That's their unique.
Right, 100%. But it's like, I do push a little bit. Like, there is a part of me that believes art is a really powerful tool in self-realization. And I do see it as a healing tool too. So like, it's not like it's all just like going to be fun all the time. You know, I guess like any skill set, like surf.
That's an important thing to learn.
Or, yeah, yeah, yeah. Like you got to, there's times where you got to learn how to fall off the board, get back on the board, how to adjust to the ocean.
And when to stop.
And when to stop.
That's one of the toughest ones, really.
When to stop. And also take a break. I always call it a pause for the cause. I said, we need to take a pause for the cause. I can see them like, you know, I'm like, oh, shoot, tears are coming. Take a pause for the cause.
3 o'clock.
Take a pause for the cause. It's okay. Leave it alone. Step back.
Right, right.
Get some perspective.
Have a piece of celery.
Yeah,
whatever you have to do.
Totally.
Turn
that's
around
an important
three
part
times
of the art. As you get close to the end, is to take a break and step back and then come back to it. And maybe there's very little left to do.
Absolutely.
Hopefully.
Perspective is everything.
Can I ask you, it's been super fascinating, we're kind of getting toward the end, but there's this other project that you do that I wanted to talk about, where it looks like you lead these dance classes with seniors.
I dance with them.
Okay
you're, I don't necessarily lead
the, what is this?
But I mean, I'm known to like,
you're in
dance.
The room dancing with,
I love
the adults
dancing.
And seniors,
if you know anything about me, I love to dance.
That's one of the original arts.
Yeah, I love dancing. I love movement. So I believe, like, again, we're talking about integrating the arts. I don't believe they're separate. So, like, to me, if you have music, you have paint, you have movement, you're creating a synergy, you're creating something. But with our seniors, a lot of times, movement is very valuable.
Yeah.
Right.
Music and movement is very valuable. And right now we're creating...
And memory.
Mm-hmm. And memory. Oh, my gosh. We've had dementia patients that you put a song on and they go from being...
That's what I'm
like,
thinking.
And they start moving. And you're like, oh, my God.
Aww.
She hadn't moved all day.
Yeah.
She moves.
Maybe she's moving like she did when she was 30.
Yeah.
That's her dance.
Or you put a like brush in their hand and they, you know, don't know what to do, and then you leave for a few minutes and they're painting.
They just do it.
Yeah. So, but dancing. So right now the videos you're seeing, we're recreating these atmospheres of celebrating our community. So we have Frank Stewart is in the photography. Is in our exhibition right now. So we have, like, he's been doing photography for over 6 decades. So he has a beautiful collection of work. And he really photographs a lot of community and gatherings, a lot of things around music. And so we've been going to the senior centers, the community centers, and recreating sort of a tea party, an atmosphere to sort of hang out and and celebrate one another and just the beauty that is our community. And within that, it's really interesting because all the last couple of months, we've had these just beautiful celebrations and just loving on one another and dancing and sharing. And today was really interesting because I went to one of the centers and for some reason, the energy was just totally different. We ended up dancing and singing, but in the beginning, we talked about grief. Mm. We cried and we talked about losing people, and it was so amazingly beautiful because that was what needed to happen that center.
Like for some reason they all just had this.
It was the right thing at that time. It was interesting. It was like I walked in and I could even feel it. There was no one had really lost anyone right immediately, but there was just this energy that was in the room of needing to address just the heart. You know, because so often we forget that like life and death are a cycle, hand in hand, and we're constantly like celebrating life and we're forgetting to say like grief is a big part of life too. And honoring a place to grieve is really powerful. And so we had that moment this morning. It was like, oh my gosh, it was so beautiful.
It struck me when you said that you you went over with each other about grief and letting it out and reviewing and then dancing.
Yeah, yeah. And it was just the most natural thing in the world because we all love each other.
That's just beautiful.
Yeah, it's so cool. And again, those things wouldn't happen if I came in and was like, okay, it's 10:22, you know, or whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, the life is happening.
Right, holding them to a schedule.
Right. And that's part of why I said, let's meet at 2:22. It's like, I want to break those conventional things that keep us bound. Like, you know, sometimes we get so hung up on being somewhere on time. Well, we're not even in time. We're not even in sync. Like, who cares if you get there if you're not there?
You know, I tried telling that to the judge.
Right?
They just didn't accept that kind of, that story.
Yeah, they weren't.
I don't know. Maybe I didn't present it well.
Yeah.
I don't know.
You needed Autumn there to help me explain that.
I was here 2 hours ago.
Right. Yeah. Come on.
Does the dancing help with your rheumatoid arthritis?
Yes. I mean, so that was a huge part of my healing was movement, dancing. And I had had a dream years ago about corn, and that was the dream that healed me. And I won't get into all the details, but what was really cool is as I had that dream, I also was getting, you know, and I believe in spirit. I know we all have different ways of communicating, but I received like actual, whether people think it's my own voice speaking to me or whatever, I hear what I'm supposed to do. And I just say, I do it. So one of them was to move, to get exercise, to dance, to move. And I could literally feel the spirit saying, okay, you're in pain, but just do it anyway. So I started by doing like aerobic workout classes and Zumba and all these things that had an energy that would kind of motivate me. And, I started at the back of the class.
Zumba is so positive.
And then in the end, I was like, I got to see myself in the mirror, you know? But I've always been a dancer. Like, even as a little girl, I was the girl, like, getting all the neighborhood kids and putting on a vinyl record and making a musical in my living room. You know what I mean? And choreography. And I was a wild child.
Oh, that was you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I was very hard to tame. Very hard to tame. I got in trouble a lot, actually. So that's kind of why I am attracted to those.
But that just goes back to what you were talking about at the beginning.
Yeah.
It was part of the growing up, and you were part of the collective unit.
Yeah.
And you saw it that way. Maybe not everybody else did.
Yeah.
And...
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Yeah. My family was very understanding, but I'm sure that... I mean, I got in trouble a lot by my dad. I think that I was just... You know, because you have to teach... And I could understand, like, I've thought a lot about that in parenting myself and working with kids is, like, there's a difference between teaching manners and changing, like, someone's spirit or behavior. Like, I never want to break someone's free spirit. But there is manners.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like
kindness. And consideration.
Right.
But that's something.
Yeah, it's a good distinction.
That's a good spirit should have.
Yeah.
There's some courtesy and consideration.
And right. If you put
so that's
love.
And thinking of others. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's just teaching.
If love is at the heart of everything you do, love 22, let's go.
Okay.
But if love is at the heart of everything you do, you're going to find your alignment. If love is at the heart, because you can't be in a space of love and compassion and generosity and gratitude. You can't be there and also hang on to these other things.
Yeah.
So for me, kindness, like I always say, be kind, play, create, and love one another.
Oh, is that your tagline?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I've added and love one another. Nice. But be kind, play, create. Because that has kind of turned into my little motto when I'm teaching, because it's like we have to be kind to ourselves as well. Like we extend that kindness as we're kind to ourselves, and then we have to have a spirit of play to actually create. Like if you don't have a spirit of play and like being willing to make mistakes and be goofy and not take yourself so seriously, and then the creation can come because you're present.
Told you.
And then love one another, because in the process of creating we can also love one another and encourage each other. And you have no idea how many people are hurting. I mean, seriously, like there's people carrying things you never know, and it's not until you offer a space of compassion and kindness.
That's where the consideration comes in. I'm so sorry.
No, it's good. Real life.
I forgot I left that.
That was shrill. Oof.
Shrill.
I usually
it was a loud one. Well, you guys, do you have any kind of final words to leave us with?
I think she just did a great job.
That was a good summation. I'm gonna post your Instagram and info about this upcoming show with the Telfair, which is very exciting. So we can all put on our calendars to see you and AJ's show. And thank you so much for making the time to speak to us today.
Thank you.
It's been incredible.
For
you guys, thanks for listening. So this has been Autumn Gary, and I will. We have our Facebook page, Art on the Air, and I will post photos and some links about Autumn and some info. And thank you so much.
Thank you so much for this opportunity. Y'all are amazing. I really appreciate this.
I really enjoyed this. Thank you.
My
so
pleasure.
Much.
Me too. Fabulous.
Thank you.
Very good.
Thank you.